Guys, I'm G, and this is the Cash Geeks Network. Yeah, I'll drink to that. All right, so right back to where we left off. So I had Sean here because I've known Sean for years, and when I met Sean, he was a baller, still a baller, right? But the reason why I love Sean is because of the information and the experience that he has, right? And so tonight, he's gonna be sharing a little bit about what's going on in the market, right? And he's gonna talk about why he knows what's going on in the market and why we should pay attention when Sean talks. So Sean, tell us a little bit about yourself. Good. Yeah, I just made that up right on the spot.
Yeah, that's good. A little bit about myself. You know, I guess currently, I'm an investor like you guys, probably closed about 46 flips, it looks like. Acquiring about 3 a month, so I'm in the business with you guys. On the real estate side, I think my passion originally started was selling people's homes for top dollar. It's kind of where I got it going. Currently trying to give those skills to other people. There's about 110 of us at JPAR City and Beach that are focused on serving people at a high level, production and service being our 2 core values. And I'm trying to, you know, learn it, live it, give it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm in that give it phase of my career. I've enjoyed so much time with my kids. They're both teenagers now, so that I have more time on top of watching their sports and just like going to their plays and all that great parent stuff as you're now just starting to experience. Yes. And now I'm just here to help others, you know, kind of lift each other up.
So what is your role at JPAR City Beach right now?
You know, I'm the broker in charge. I'm definitely the one that helps guide them with that experience. I definitely help all the pending transactions get to closing. You know, we're doing between 80 and 108 pendings a month. So I get to see all that leading indicator stuff. What's getting accepted? What isn't getting accepted? How much to asking price? How much in closing costs? When deals cancel, why? When they push, why? So every week I'm getting a chance to see all those deals. And that's really, I've always enjoyed that. You know, real estate is not easy, but it's simple.
Yeah.
It's simple in what makes a deal happen, and it's emotional when it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah, so one of the biggest things and feedback as real estate investors, it's all based on how hot is the retail market, right?
How's the market?
Yeah.
How's the market?
So based on how hot the retail market is, that's how investors make their buying decisions. Right, hey, if I see the market slowing down, I'm gonna maybe slow down on my buying. I might be a little more conservative, so on and so forth, right? So right now, the purpose of tonight is to really figure out what's going on in the market, right? It's been about almost a year now since things got a little crazy, right? And so we, as investors, are always curious on what's going on in the retail market. Prices going up, are prices going down? Are houses sitting on the market? Are they not? Are days on market low, less? What's going on, right? And so that's how us investors gather information, but I feel like we don't know two things. We don't know how to access that information, or we don't have the, I guess, proximity that you have with 110 agents getting daily feedback, right? So you guys are on track to do over 1,000 sales this year, right?
Yeah.
And so seeing over 1,000 data points, right, throughout the year, you kind of see a little bit more than the average investor, right?
For sure. And I've been through, you know, I've had my real estate license since 2000, so I've been through a couple cycles as well. And I have that accounting background. I work at a publicly traded real estate company, see how they see things. So I think all that combined maybe gives me a little bit of insight that I hopefully today can share and then teach you guys a little bit of how you guys can pull it out as
yeah,
well.
That's awesome. And when you say you worked at a publicly traded
real estate company,
you were?
We ran a region for Zip Realty. It was the 5th largest real estate company in the nation. We opened it from scratch. I opened it from scratch with, listen, without the agents, there's no business, right?
Yeah.
So I helped get these agents up to speed during the Great Recession, 2007, getting into a deal a month in that market, which,
yeah,
by the way, everyone thought the market was terrible. So when people ask me how the market is, I'm always just gonna give the same answer. It depends on your situation. And And there, it depends on where too.
Yeah. So I would say, or I guess my first question right now is, what are you seeing that may be surprising? Maybe, you know, like what is surprising you right now? Is it some prices have gone down more than you expected? Prices have stayed? Neighborhoods, you're like, yeah, I thought that neighborhood was gonna take a dump for sure and it hasn't. Or I thought this neighborhood was gonna keep going up and it's just taking a dump. Is there anything that's the most shocking right now?
Yeah, like real estate's hyper-local, right? When I say hyper-local, think about subdivision, then zip code. And even in zip codes, think about roadways, railroad tracks, you know, major, you know, if there's a JA plant behind it, right, that's gonna affect real estate. But really it does, it's very local real estate. And yeah. I think we kind of look at it like, how's the market? And we see Jackson Hole the best place to invest. And we're like, check, everyone goes full speed. And that's really a dangerous place to be. I mean, you can lose or you can win. Rising tide lifts all boats. Listen, end of the day, after COVID, the 2-year run when we saw prices go up 25% on average a year, it didn't matter what you bought, as long as you acquired everything you won.
Right.
We saw that change about now, a year ago.
Yep.
And if you didn't experience it, come June, you experienced it. Come July, you're like, what is going on? And I hear things that just aren't actually factual true, like, oh, we'll see in the fall, it'll change. I don't know where anyone factually comes up with that opinion. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
It really doesn't. But we do know based on the data what is going to happen every like 60 to 90 days, with the exception of what we'll call a black swan event. You know what that is?
Explain.
What's a black swan event? A black swan event is this thing that no one saw coming, no one forecast happening, and it changes our world. COVID's a great example, right? But then sometimes it changes different than we thought it would. And I'd say COVID is a great example of that. The first 6 months or 3 months, we thought one thing was gonna happen. And then honestly, the opposite, literally the opposite happened, yeah. Right? So that's a great example. But let's talk about stuff that was a black swan event that I thought would affect the market. Collapsing of banks. How about you guys? You guys probably thought that would be.
That's a good point.
And turned out the bank's like, no, we're gonna go on the credit card here. We're just gonna do quantitative easing. We're gonna not even show you guys how much we actually spent to guarantee all those deposits, then we'll just find another bank to buy it. All good. No issue in the real estate market.
Yeah.
Would you have thought that was gonna
happen?
That's
true. That's true.
I would have never thought that would happen. Yeah. But at the same time,
everybody was texting everybody.
Yeah.
Did you see this? Did you see that?
But big nothing burger in real estate, right?
Right. We thought we were gonna like have to start shifting bank accounts and taking money out.
Yeah, well, you know, there are a couple of things. If you have over $250,000 in a bank account, you probably shouldn't. Right? That's not insured.
Correct.
But for the first time ever, we insured all of them.
Yeah.
Sure, we the people.
Yeah.
So I think we have that happening. We've had high inflation, which is still stubbornly higher than the Fed wants it. They put a tax on us called raising interest rates, which affects mortgage rates, which affects affordability. That's a real issue we've experienced. So I think prices adjusting isn't terrible for affordability. But there's a lot of things we can get into.
Yeah.
So the macro stuff is what we're talking about, but really real estate's local. And I think just talking about the local stories is where we go a little bit deeper, I think, for people. But those black swan events, we never know they're coming.
Yeah.
Right? And frankly, if anyone has been paying attention, 6 out of the last 8 recessions, real estate values went up.
Right.
Which is maybe counterintuitive to how people think.
Yeah.
So really what it comes down to is we just have to look at the data.
Yeah.
We have to develop our local real estate experts. We don't want to learn on the deals we're doing. I think that's
really a good point. Everybody chop that down. Don't learn on the deals you're doing.
And your network's your net worth, right? So I think this room, people in these networks, you know, you wanna ask a lot of questions. You wanna deal with people that are actually in those markets and people that have that information to share with you.
Right.
But that's very important. Think in your journey.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I want to get into the numbers that you have for us. Couple years ago, I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago, I did a panel. Sean was on the panel. And Sean was the only one who came prepared with like stats and numbers and everything. So I was like, who do I get a market update from this time around? It's got to be Sean. Sure enough, Sean came prepared. So as far as where we are now compared to where we were last year, what are you seeing?
So a couple things. I think the thing to understand overall is if you look at the stats, the market is down in volume of sales and prices overall from a year ago. So that means if you bought something about this time last year to now, it's probably worth less, except for in a bunch of the examples I'm going to share with you that it's worth more. And then there's this thing we do as investors that we call value add, right? We add a bedroom, we add square footage, we upgrade the home from things that aren't livable to what today's buyers demand. And you can make money in that despite what's happening in the market.
Right.
So I think that's an important thing to kind of look at, because if prices go down 2 or 3%, but you're making 30% on your investment, would you still do it?
Yes.
Of course. So you just got to put that in mind. And if it goes up 3 or 4%, great.
Right.
So I think we need to look at things that way.
Yeah.
I think people get too much like, where's the market going?
Yeah.
And no one's ever right. I mean, I think that's the one thing we see over and over again. It's like,
except for Sean. Sean's always right.
I did say buy everything.
That is true. Right. Yeah.
I should have bought more.
Yeah. So as far as you're mentioning real estate super hyper local, right? And so what are some pockets that you're seeing where, you know, everything in general is kind of going down, but what are some big shockers of, this one really took a dip, or this one didn't take a dip?
Let me hit on this real quick. So Wall Street Journal just literally minutes ago posted, house prices posted largest annual drop in more than 11 years. Scary title, right? Sounds terrible. Well, then the next thing they promote is sales of homes fell 3.4%. That's the volume of sales. So that's the first thing you have to look at. Secondly, they're telling you the national story. So the first thing is 4.28 million homes will sell annually. We always say this. 4 million people will buy and sell because of all the reasons. Diplomas, death, debt, you know, divorce, all these things. Having a child, starting a family, right? If you have a three-bedroom house and you have more kids, you need more bedrooms. So there's gonna be 4 million people that transact all the time. This is something that we need to know. And even though, but there's gonna be less sales, why is that? I think we know one of the reasons is a lot of people are locked in a low interest rate.
Yeah.
So why am I gonna take, it was an inflationary time where everything's going up, why am I gonna increase my housing payment, right? So that is one of the factors that's unique to this market. But you asked me the question of, well, the hyperlocal market, right?
Yeah.
So in our whole market, you guys know you go to NEFAR.com market stats. NEFAR.com market stats, they have this little chart. You guys can pull it anytime you want. They put it out the 10th of every month. You guys should go to it, look at it. They have all the hyperlocal areas in here, but you really should have a real estate expert that you're doing business with and that you trust to kind of interpret some of this for you, because what's it really mean to you, you know? So there's these stats you see for all of the five counties of our MSA. Guess what? You're not buying a property in all five counties. You're not selling a property. So those things exist. I do like the graphs on it, the charts kind of tell you, because you do see charts kind of bottoming out and going up, trend lines. I would tell you to look at the trends versus the monthly numbers to look for trends.
So really quickly, can you repeat where people can find that again?
NEFAR.com, NEFAR.com market stats. They put it out the 10th of every month. So I'd encourage you guys to go to that and pull that. And then they have the hyper local areas, which are not the way you think of the areas. Like for instance, area one is South Side, Mandarin, and Bartram. I would call those three different areas. But our MLS says they're one. And then they have South Side. Well, geez, what's the difference between South Side one and South Side two? Real estate professional. They just, you know, these are the graphs they used to draw, all the lines in the MLS. I think you just need to know they don't relate to the way we think of real estate.
Right.
And then there's areas like West Jacksonville. You know, I might look at, you know, certain areas, certain streets is different than other streets in West Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then they group some areas together. Springfield, downtown, Trout River, South. Those are different, you know, Springfield's different than downtown, right? Yeah. So just some things to consider. But then some areas are great. Orange Park might be easy to kind of understand what's Orange Park. So just something I think to look at. But like I said, I would just find an expert that you guys can have in your pocket, have coffee with or lunch once a quarter. Find someone that's actually looking at the data, because unfortunately, you've learned this. You ask them how the real estate market is and they go, oh, that's good. And that's not really
right.
The story.
Yeah.
So what pockets, you asked me what pockets are.
Yeah, so let's dig into
the areas.
Micro values, right? So what is an area, I guess, that hasn't gone down year over year from last year?
Yeah, so Atlantic Beach up 9.5% year over year. You guys probably like the beach properties, right?
Yeah.
Those are pretty good. But one thing with data you want to look at too, it says Neptune Beach is up 51.8%. That's not really true. It is for this month, but not overall. Why is that? Because 6 homes happened to be for sale there. We sold 2 of them, and both the ones we sold were like $1.3 million. In Neptune Beach, that's above the median price point, so it skews the numbers. But overall, the beaches community is down 20% when you look at all the beaches combined from a year ago. So why is that? Some people bought Airbnbs, it didn't quite work out the way they wanted. Maybe you had a development idea and then development costs way more to do construction than you thought. We have a lot of stuff like that happening with not many sales.
Right.
So that area though, Atlantic Beach is going up. And then you have that Mayport North Beach area, which I think a lot of investors here have done pretty well with. That is up 0.5%, big time.
That's good.
Well, it's all about beating the market. Keystone Heights up 6.1% year over year. Nocatee, so I would kind of think person living near Nocatee, it feels overpriced to me, but the data says, nope, up 2.4% in value. And then I think one of the two biggest shockers are Nassau County is up 5.3% as a county. I think it has to do with a lot of the new construction that's up there. But then Putnam County is up 13%.
Yeah.
So Putnam's had the biggest increase as an area in our MLS.
Wow. And so which one is the market that took the biggest hit? Is it the beaches?
Jack's Beach, yeah, being the biggest. Ponte Vedra, second double digit at minus 10.9%. Some areas that I think some people are experiencing now, Arlington and Fort Caroline, which has been a very popular investor area, is down 7.6%.
Mm.
So, you know, $300,000 house, 7.6%, that's like over $22,000.
Yeah.
So that's a big, that could be the difference of spread of making money and not, right?
So if I were to live in Fort Caroline, should I sell my house right now?
Well, this gets down to the bigger question. Price is a function of supply and demand.
Mm.
So, right, so let's talk about that. So in Arlington, there's 1.7 months of inventory.
Okay.
So what's that mean?
That means that if all the houses on the market right now, no newer inventory, there would only be a month and 1.7 months worth of supply left.
Right. And that is considered a seller's market, right? A strong seller's market. Yeah. Anything under 3 months inventory is a seller's market. It used to be considered 4 to 6 months of absorption or inventory. You'll hear those words interchanged. Is considered a balanced market, but now we're in the new market after COVID. So if there's 3 or 4 months inventory, it feels balanced. You guys are seeing that. When it goes under 2 though, it's definitely a seller's market. So there's a conflicting piece of data, right? And then it's about how many days does it take to get a contract on that house? Well, in that market, Arlington, it's 22 days.
Gotcha.
Anything under a month's great.
Right.
Don't you guys love that? Rehabbing homes in the market. Get a contract in 3 weeks feels good.
Yeah.
So is it a good market or a bad market? This tells me another piece of the data. So what price do people receive versus what they've listed for? So I did those numbers for us as well.
Okay.
So this is kind of like advanced real estate. It's why I say get a real estate expert. Hopefully you guys will share that information.
Oh yeah.
There's some great agents on the team that can help you if I can't. But 97.6% of asking price.
Yeah. And so in the Arlington, Fort Caroline area, okay.
But the thing that we do like is what percent of homes go for over asking price. That kind of gives us an idea too. And that market's about 20%. So one out of 5 homes go for over asking, bidding more.
Yeah.
How fun's that as an investor?
Those are still happening.
Yeah, so prices are down overall. So you still have to, so that means some people bought wrong. That means some people bought maybe June, July, August. Maybe they have hard money on it, maybe they can't refinance out and it's gonna be a rental, and maybe that's affecting.
Right.
So I think the data on the days of market absorption and the how many homes go for asking price helps us a lot. And then let's look at how many homes sold. Is it 6 like the beaches? Or is it a larger number? So in Arlington, we have 92 sales in 1 month. That's a pretty good idea.
That's a big number.
Stuff's,
right?
Stuff's moving, yeah.
What is the biggest moving market right now, neighborhood? What has sold, what has the most sales?
So 113 in the Marietta, White House, Baldwin area.
Wow.
So that's probably a lot more than you guys would think.
I have a deal in Baldwin, if anyone needs a deal in Baldwin, I'll get
it. I love that. Fleming Island.
Wow.
So that's what we call it, the Clay County, St. John's County. It's kind of a made up way we talk about it, but people want to go to St. John's County until they see the median price point. You guys might have done this. The CDDPs, HOAs, all that high tax stuff. And then, you know, Fleming Island has highly rated schools as well. So that could be, and it's lower priced homes compared to that. That could be a reason. Mm. So that's a big transitioning market. And then Southside in general. These are just single family statistics as
right.
well.
Right.
So attached townhome, single family.
And what about, do you have anything there on like multifamily?
I do. So multifamily, up or down, guys? What do you think? Year over year. Down in value 19.2% year over year.
What?
Not surprising to us. We actually talked about this. Why is that? Well, a couple things. Was there like a frothy market a year ago? Like everyone who is anyone's like, multifamily is the category to buy in. You guys see any kind of new multifamily going up in construction around Jacksonville? Like every corner, right? So that was a factor. Then you have, we like to call them the big boys, right? The people with a lot of money, hedge funds, smart investors, right? Not emotional investors. And we saw them buy, they were in acquisition mode.
Oh yeah.
So that happened. A lot of them also acquired homes with lower interest rates a year ago. But what's happening to the interest rate market? What happens with investor grade products? Do they get a 30-year fixed interest rate?
Mm-hmm.
They do not. They have an adjustable rate mortgage. Most of them adjusting as little as 3 years, right? Plus, the vacancy rates are maybe a little bit more than they thought. The cost to rehab these properties are more expensive than they thought. And the value now is less.
Right.
So we can see maybe that opportunity where some people are getting out of it now.
Yeah.
So that is something to look at and consider.
So based on the stats, what would you say right now? Obviously, I know you can't, like you said, every month is different, right? So we could look at these next month and they could be totally different.
This is a year over year number. So we'll see some of these trend up, some trend down.
Right.
Like I told you, I'm gonna do this for you guys and so you can kind of share it on the CashKings network.
Yeah.
So you guys can see how it's trending. Like I said, NEFAR.com is just a really good way to look by the areas and just see the trend lines. Just look at the graphs. That will show you where it's trending as well. But we do have a lot of things that had a month over month appreciation from last month. So that's a great sign. The spring market lift, as we like to say.
Okay. And do you foresee that going into the summer months as a trend of continuing to increase?
Well, I think that's our concern. I think Jackson will outpace the national story, right? I think we'll do better. I think we have more demand. We don't see a lot of supply coming to market, which is helpful for us. And there's the hangover. This summer be like last summer? I think some people are a little concerned.
Yeah.
So some investors who are buying might keep their money on the sidelines. We do have, 20-30% of our market that's investor driven.
Correct.
So it is a factor for us. Affordability is probably the bigger factor for people buying homes. So if interest rates are less than they were, we had interest rates that were October, November in the 7% range. They're about 6.3-6.4% now. There's some people that think they're gonna be in the high fives end of the year. Seems unrelated to the interest rate hikes that the Fed's doing. They're kind of inversely related. I'm sure we can ask a lot of our mortgage professional friends why that happens. But here's the reality, nobody really knows. Nobody really knows about rates, but prices going up too high and rates going up does affect affordability. So if prices are kind of stable and rates drop a little bit, that could help us get more appreciation.
Mm.
But I wouldn't be surprised for the overall market to see maybe 1% appreciation for the next couple of months.
Right.
So that's 3-4% up overall. I think we're gonna, have a slight gain here when we look at Jacksonville's market for the whole year. That's my belief on the numbers. I don't see anything happening that's gonna drive that down. We did have builders have a little too much inventory and they've given a lot of incentives or price drops to get them done. We're not seeing as much of that. So I think that's helpful. And costs are going up to rehab a home, so you have to make that back. So I think inflation does raise all values just a little bit. So inflation is helpful to prices. So we'll have a slight increase in the overall market.
Yeah, my forecast. So how can investors make decisions looking at the stats, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry if I bored you guys with some of the numbers there. But how do you make decisions, right? So okay, if the market is gonna be stable, right? We'll just call that slightly up, slightly down as being kind of stable, right? So as an investor, that's really good. So you should look at the last 2 or 3 months of sales of something that's similar to what you're hoping to invest in. And then you have to look at maybe the crystal ball, the after repair value.
Right.
How much square footage am I adding? What condition am I putting this in? Then I should find homes that are similar the last two, you know, ideally you want to find 5 homes that are similar the last month to 2 or 3 months and then average that out. That's a great way for you to say, that's my value. When we did that in the fall, we were able to tell wholesalers and other people, hey, listen, that's not the value. No, I know you're pulling comps from 6 months ago, but here's the market. And we did well. We bought a couple homes that way. And then a lot we just said no to.
Right.
So the numbers are still coming in where they're not really working from a lot of investors. Like, hey, I found this home. And you're like, you can't say, well, we'll buy a home 90 cents on the dollar, right?
Because right.
That works out because I got a buyer for it.
I miss those days.
And well, you know, it's not a healthy market long term.
Yeah.
When you can make money in this market, you should do it. But buying a home, doing nothing, and selling it for more money isn't really
right.
A regular business decision.
Correct.
Is that the good old days? That's what people talk about sometimes. It depends what side you're on.
That's true. It's funny because we were selling, there's a whole debate on like, I just came back from a mastermind and you know, I'm the guy who's selling a bunch of stuff to the hedge funds. And so there's a big debate on like, don't sell things to the hedge funds because they're gonna, you know, wipe out the home ownership in the US. And if you're selling to hedge funds, you're joining the dark side. You need to keep that inventory from Wall Street.
I think I heard this in 07 when we had, you know, BlackRock Invitation Homes.
Yeah.
Did those homes ever come to market?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
no, they're gone forever.
They're rentals.
Right.
Thought about that.
Yeah. So as far as back to analyzing days on market versus months of inventory, right? And so we were kind of looking at just the example of the Fort Caroline, where we saw values go down a little bit from last year, but the days on market, or not days on market, but days on market
days
was good.
Days on market absorption rate were
right. That was great.
Right.
And then we have 1.7 months of inventory. So does that tell me as an investor, based on my ARVs right now, in 2 to 3 months, when I go to sell, I should be where my ARV is?
Also, even though I'm telling you that your number, we went up, you know, 18% in that market through the summer and then a bigger drop. Like I said, I think it's because of more investors maybe than people buying the home to live in that area as well.
That's true.
I mean, that's,
yeah.
And then a lot of people had to get out of it. Hard money, loans are for 6 months or a year. I mean, it's just people who are going to burr the property, right?
Yeah.
Buy it, renovate it, rent it out, and then refinance. Well, now the rates are too high to do that.
Right.
So I think you have a lot of exit strategies that were affected in that market because I'm not living. Like my dad always said to me, hey, if it goes bad, are you willing to live in it?
Right.
That was a lot of people were like, no, I took my 401k money or I worked with my spouse.
Right.
This is going to be our first investment. Get rich or lose.
Yeah.
And it worked out badly and we're out. So I think Arlington was maybe that's where those numbers. But we also can look at the trend line, and the trend line's flattened out. So we're not going to see that decrease. We're actually seeing it kind of flatten out and get, you know, like I said, if it goes up 2 or 3% or 0% the next 2 or 3 months, just plan your numbers off of that.
Yeah, that's huge. So I know we were kind of talking, obviously you're an active investor right now, right? So you recently just purchased a couple homes, right? We're under contract.
Yeah.
Purchased a couple of homes. Like that. So right now, knowing all the stats that you know, right, knowing the market as well as you do, what do you look for in a flip? What areas are you targeting? Is it less of an area thing? Is it more of a numbers thing? Is it more of, hey, I only touch, right now I'm only gonna touch X? How are you making buying decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I think any area should, if the numbers work, the numbers work. I think that's an important thing to know. There might be some volatility. I think you have to ask yourself the question, well, if it goes, if I think it's, how long am I gonna be in and out of this? Right. So I know we're in and out in 1 to 3 months, but a lot of financing, you have to have it for 90 days. But if it's going to take you a year to rehab it because you don't have the network, like you said, it's a bigger issue for you.
Right.
There's too much variability in a year, but there's not a lot in 3 months. Mm-hmm. So when I look at it, it's just going to be based off the last couple months of supply, based on the comps I see, if there are any, or if I'm able to add square footage. I know what the price per square foot is, right? So if it's $200 a square foot in average on our market, and I'm adding 1,000 square feet, you know, that's $200,000 in equity I can make. So if I'm looking at assets like that, I'm less concerned, because I feel good about whatever it is. Maybe you want to make $30,000 a property, or maybe you want to make a certain percentage. I think those typical rules we hear about investing, like 70% of ABR minus repairs, you're still not going to find a lot of assets to those numbers, right, but right. Yeah, you want to start there, guys.
Yeah,
I think the fact that people were like, no, I buy 85% in the dollar of ABR, that's where you get caught up, and you know, if it adjusts 20%, you're out of business. I mean, listen, if you're an investor, you want 9 out of 10 to work out.
Right.
So I think you got to look at things, am I stacking the decks? I'm going to win 90% of the time. Because even if you lines up, you're going to be wrong. You guys ever noticed that? That happens, right? But it can't be your first one.
Except Sean. Sean's correct, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I definitely had one that I didn't win on. But you know, because I'm a real estate broker, I made the commission to cover my losses, right?
Yeah.
So you have that.
That's right. So as far as right now flipping properties, obviously the numbers make sense, do it, right? Like, what are some things that you're doing, maybe different, right, from the market before? Are you seeing that you have to renovate properties more? I know staging is becoming a thing again.
Yeah, how do you sell homes for top dollar, right?
Correct.
How do you sell homes for top dollar? So I'm going to tell you
this. In today's market.
You have to do everything to make the home, like, consider it like, how do I make this new construction? Mm. How am I making this new construction? You know, you have to do all the things. Loanability, insurability, you have to make sure it checks all those boxes. So all the major things have to have economic life, as they said. So if you have a roof, you should get away if it's like, okay, it's like a 17-year-old roof. Not anymore. It's got to have like 5 years of economic life. Once again, last summer, it had to be like, feel like new, right?
Yeah.
It has to be permanent. Everything has to be permanent properly. You're going to have to be paid the money to do that. Otherwise, you're going to take less. Insurability is an issue. You're going to do the 4-point and figure out all that stuff's done. And you got to make it look like a model home. Color, smell good, economic deficiency solved. So you really can't cut corners in this market. You have to do it the right way. Or got to get a clean and sell to the next person.
Right.
That is something you can do that does work. If you're not going to do all the work, or you find out your costs are higher, you got to get out of it. It's not, the market will punish you. I think that's the lesson I am seeing when I look at these numbers.
Yeah.
Those homes that don't go, that are on the market for longer, or they don't sell, they don't look good, they're not staged. The staged homes still, I do stage homes. I mean, I paid $12 here, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Two properties, just staged. And yeah, I don't love the expense either, but I do it because it sells homes for top dollars. That, professional pictures. I mean, some of you guys are great with the iPhone, but in general, cell phone pictures do not work. And then you need someone who has a marketing budget. Are they investing part of their commission in marketing your home?
Right.
Mega open houses, all those kind of things, talking to the neighbors. That's how the home goes live, how it launches. You can definitely help someone get 7 or 8% more launching it correctly, which could be all the difference in the world.
Yeah, no, that's huge. I remember last year we started doing some flips, and you know, some people on our team are licensed, so we're like, we'll just put them on the market ourselves, right?
And learned some lessons pretty quickly.
Definitely learned some lessons. And my dispo guys were like treating retail buyers like they were wholesale cash buyers. They're like, hey, what's up with this inspection period, man? Like,
not refundable deposit, no inspection period.
And as soon as we listed them with the realtor, it was night and day.
Yeah. And there's ones that know what they're doing and ones that don't, unfortunately. Right. Just because they have a license, I think it takes like 2 weeks to get one.
So yeah.
It's not the factor, but you hire someone that gets more money, and you can ask them for their stats. Show me your days on market. Show me how much you get to asking price to list price. Those are things you guys can ask any real estate professional. If they can't pull them up, call another one, because there's like 12,000 of them.
Yeah, that's true.
There's like a good 2,000 that are really experts.
Yeah, and they're all at JPAR, right?
A bunch of them are.
So what, I'm just curious, what is the market, the neighborhood that has the most days on market?
Highest days on market, so the longest it takes to sell something. Orange Park.
Orange Park.
So Orange Park is one that you asked me where I wouldn't invest right now. Probably Orange Park. I'm not going to make the numbers.
Really?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I was just.
I was just about to start marketing a deal in Orange Park. Jeez.
Orange Park. I love. I mean, listen. For like 12 years, I feel like you couldn't lose anything.
That's
at Orange
true.
Park.
Anytime I got something in Orange Park, I'm like, we're going to make.
But something happened with the values going up and people buying them, and then the renovation. You know, these are a lot of these homes are older there.
Yep.
So you still have to do a lot of the work, even if it's been deferred, it still has to be done. And now you had a big drop in value, 6.1% less. So a $300,000, $350,000 home, I mean, 6% is like 10-ish thousand bucks. I mean, that's a lot of money. Or I'm sorry, $20,000. $20,000. Sorry, follow me, $20,000. But that's a big chunk, especially if you're trying to make 30 and then it lost 20.
Right.
So we're seeing that, and some people, once again, oh, I invested in here, I just need to get out of it. Or I bought it last year because I liked I can get a home that's moving ready in the threes. And now I can sell it in the threes. It costs me 7-8% to sell this house.
Right.
So that is one market that, once again, you got to buy right, but you got to look at the last, the comps have adjusted this last.
And what was the average days on market in Orange Park?
It's almost 2 months, 54 days.
2 months, wow.
So imagine, you know, that's also an extra month of carrying costs.
Yeah.
Green Cove Springs as well. You have the out, but you know, you have that area as well that, you know, a lot of new construction there as well to consider, or unique properties with land and things like that.
Yeah.
When you see kind of recessions happen, prices towards what we call the city center do better. Like Southside. Southside's up 0.5%. You guys probably feel that way about Southside because it's
right.
The center.
Yeah.
Really, the center of Jacksonville is not downtown. I know we, and I'm really hopeful we get there in the next 10 years, but it's not, right? Right?
I agree.
The center of our town is like the St. John's Town Center.
Yeah.
So like take that circle and go 5 minute drive, 10 minute drive, 15 minute drive. Once you go about 20 minute drive, you're in the outskirts. So that's if you go further north or further west or further south even.
Yeah.
That, and you'll see that in the numbers as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's a good rule of thumb in a recessionary time because people tighten up. Gas costs more, I'm making less money, eggs are $8, right? All these like issues. Like I'm buying chickens. Like people start doing all kinds of crazy stuff, even though it doesn't make it more. I'm gonna buy an electric car for $30,000 more and save on gas. Not really, you're not gonna save. But people do all this stuff, right? We see it. So just follow humans and what they're doing. Or if you have a kid like I do, ask them what's happening on TikTok as a trend because I'm not gonna get on TikTok.
Yeah.
But my point is you'll see the city center. Those assets do better. So Mandarin, Southside, you know, anything intercoastal west, the beaches are always the beaches. Even when you start going just a little bit over the bridge, some areas of west side around downtown, Orange Park closer, those areas will do better. Orange Park, I think, is the same thing as we saw in Arlington. A lot of investors paid too much. And I think that's what we're dealing with. A lot of older homes, so then we didn't do all the work and going, I got to deal with the roof, which a roof or a septic system is going to kill you.
Yeah.
I mean, who prices in the big stuff sometimes?
Yeah.
But what if the AC system goes, I thought we were good. Well, you are once you replace it.
Right. So as far as like looking at the numbers, right, if someone were to say, hey, I'm seeing Orange Park is taking a lot longer to sell, it's down 6%. If I want to buy a deal right now in Orange Park, I should probably be a little bit more conservative.
Let me take 5% off my ARV.
Right.
That's what I would just tell you. Good rule. If you can get it out in 6 months, take 1% a month off your ARV, however long you're going to have it.
Mm.
It's going to take you 12 months, take 12% off your numbers. That's a good rule of thumb. The worst market we ever saw in Jacksonville, 07 through 2010, we lost about 1% a month if you average out over 36 months. You can just ballpark that in.
Right.
Cool. I'll just take those numbers and say it goes down 1% a month. And if you did that in the hot market you're in, you probably were okay.
Right.
Truth be told, right?
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of the just rule of thumb stuff for you guys. It's really easy to do that, right? Great, I'm gonna have it for 6 months, I'll take 6% off my numbers. Now I'm safe.
Yeah.
Maybe you also start tightening up your contractor connections. I think that's one thing that happened during the great, after COVID, the great relocation or whatever we're calling, who knows what we'll call it a couple years from now.
That's true.
Right? Not everyone got rich, I promise you. I'm going to promise you.
A lot of people got rich and then lost it.
Yeah, this happens a lot of times, right? But what's interesting about that market is I think the contractors were making what we were making on the flip. So
yeah.
I think you got to tighten that up a little bit. Get real tight on like what do supplies cost, supplies plus labor cost. Maybe you're going to start hiring your own. If you're doing enough flips, maybe you're going to hire some of your own tradesmen. I think this is something we all need to consider, because that new rule where they're just kind of building a $20,000 or $30,000 profit for them, why are you left taking the risk and holding the bag?
Yeah.
So tighten up your network. You said you have a trade show coming up.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
Sounds like a great opportunity to start
100%.
Doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as making decisions now, what are you most excited about in the Jacksonville market?
Well, I think affordability and normalcy, we're back in what I call a normal market. Some normal things that exist for 6 months at a time versus the market feels like it changes every couple months. We have stability. Mm. So it seems like a stable market. It seems predictable in buying and selling. No one's really, you know, getting a raw deal or saying it has to happen this way. And then, you know, when appreciation is kind of normal, then we can base rules around that or how we operate.
Right.
So I like that. I think it's great for affordability. I mean, listen, a lot of our people do need some closing costs built into it when they buy, right? So we can do that again.
Right.
I think that's great.
Right. So that's a great question, or segue to a question. What are you seeing right now that you maybe didn't see in the last market as far as, let me ask the seller for some closing costs, right? Let me negotiate a little bit, right?
Two or 3% off asking price is normal.
Right. So as far as...
except for Mayport, 110% of asking price.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So we should all be doing deals in Mayport.
Well, it's also next to Atlantic Beach, so that could be like...
Right.
You know, what is... I think Atlantic Beach, a lot of stuff's now Atlantic Beach that isn't Atlantic Beach. Maybe that's a factor. Hmm.
So as far as... All good. So, we'll move on. So, right now, you're flipping some houses, you have the brokerage, right? You got 110 agents active, going crazy. How many of your agents are, just curious, how many of your agents are flipping houses, and how many of your agents are bringing you deals?
I think 20 or 25%, if you ask them, they would tell you they're an investor as well. Then if you look at the truth in anything, well, tell me one investment you closed on and you acquired it, you exited. If we go down to that, I think it's under 10% of the agents.
Got it.
So under half the people who say they want to do it have actually done it. And then some got caught, a number didn't work out. Sometimes maybe the interest and the things they thought would happen, that they're going to keep it as a rental and they got out of it. So that's a challenge. And then on top of it, a home has to be remodeled to get top dollar. A lot of people can't do that. So they do look for solutions. So we have some agents who bring stuff to us that we partner with the agent and the homeowner to do the work, manage it predictably, give the agent back a pretty listing. So now they're going to earn their commission on a larger amount and then share the profit with the homeowner. So we have, one that's actually on the market that we just did, and we have another one that's under contract.
Nice.
So trying to give the people back some equity. There's some companies that say, hey, you can just pay us to do all the work. Like there's one in our area called Curbio, just to kind of put a company out there. They tend to come in a lot higher on their costs, if you guys look at it. Secondly, whatever the homeowner says they want to upgrade, they go, sure, I'll charge 30% on top of these costs. Mm-hmm. No connection to what's going to be the best things to upgrade to sell the home for top dollar. So that's a disconnect, right? Now pay a closing, no big deal.
Right.
But obviously if you're doing the wrong things, we've all seen homes where someone thought they're adding value to it, and you're like, that does not, it's a preference, it doesn't add value.
Right. And so how many realtors would you say from your team are bringing you deals to buy?
We have 4 or 5 agents that, still are trying to figure out how to get someone in their top dollar. Some are learning the lesson like, hey, I'll put it on the MLS, and if the MLS doesn't cooperate, then I'm gonna talk about it. So that's some of it that we're seeing. As with any investor, we'd love to see it not on the MLS first, because that hurts us, because someone pulls up, you bought it for this in the old pictures, and you have a conversation about it. It does not help, right? If you see a pretty end product, they're okay. When they see this older picture, that's kind of changes the conversation with some people. But that's one of it. Secondly, we're trying to teach them, and a lot of them are learning from others, okay, I need to have this home be in good condition.
Right.
I can't just put it on the market and wholetail it and it's gonna sell.
Right.
Wholetail just means like I'm gonna take a home, maybe I do a couple little things to it, and I throw in the MLS just thinking a buyer's gonna step up and buy it. We're not seeing buyers really do that. They're really, and then when they get estimates, their estimate costs for a normal buyer are more expensive than someone who has a connection. So it's going to cost them more, supplies are up, labor is up in cost, and a lot of people don't want to take that on.
Right. So I remember what we were talking about before. Okay. And I want to ask this, because if you're a flipper right now, right, and you're scared about, it's not really scared, but I'm scared, if I put my house on the market, I don't know what my ARV is going to be. I want my house to go over ask, right? And obviously we talk about staging, professional pictures and stuff like that, but what are some incentives that sellers are giving to buyers to try to get more for their house?
Yeah, like paying their closing costs, you know, offering 2 or 3% towards closing costs, very common. Some are gonna use it towards buying down their interest rate. Some are gonna use it towards your actual closing costs. I mean, affordability has been an issue with inflation and everything costing more money, including homes. You know, it's definitely a factor.
Okay, so as far as investor flipping right now, obviously we talked about staging, professional pictures, can't cut corners, renovated everything like if it was new, insurance, right? It's huge, everything has to be insurable. And then on the incentive side, as far as offering to buyers, 2 to 3% for—
Yeah, I'm either gonna give 3% to my price or for closing cost concessions, right? But if it's fully rehab, you don't have to give both.
Got it, okay.
It's important to understand.
Okay, so as far as lenders go, right? Having a strong lender or seeing the lenders out there that have the best product right now for affordability, what are you seeing out there?
That's definitely a mixed bag. Unfortunately, just like real estate agents, a lot of mortgage brokers weren't in the business in 2019 and before. So this whole affordability thing, they don't quite understand. Sometimes they're just pricing a product that benefits them the most. Mm-hmm. And they think by doing that, they can just tell the buyer to go find closing costs and cover it. But as a real estate agent, we know that the mortgage rate they pay and closing costs is their biggest factor. So that's the number one factor for us to help manage with them and the right lender. But yeah, a lender making extra 2% isn't helpful or is the deal. I mean, unfortunately, the last market we're in, all that happens.
Yeah. Right.
And then we have brokers versus lenders and all stuff I'm not gonna really get into.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, you wanna find someone who's not trying to maximize their profit per deal and always get a second or third opinion. Mm. That is, you know, with a couple of people you trust or a couple of people's names you see in all the online boards and things like that, or ask a broker for 2 or 3 names and just have more of a consultation before you get under contract.
Right.
You get really know the numbers.
And as far as when you're listing a house, when you list a property, do you like put it on the MLS like, hey, I recommend this lender, or I want to close with this title company?
We love, on a listing agent, you want to control everything if you can. Unfortunately, you can't, right? The buyers really are in control. So when that happens, if you're concerned about it, offer to get a second opinion with a local lender you trust, so you at least know. Like a letter from Wells Fargo or a major bank, Bank of America, whoever, a large bank out of your area, they might have just asked them some questions and not looked at their tax return or the W-2s. So that's the biggest mistake you make is you go under contract and you find out 20 days later they were never really approved. And that's one of the biggest things you want to avoid as a seller.
Right. No, that's huge. I think right now, like, everybody wants to push on the gas again, right? And we still don't have 100% certainty that we need to push on the gas. How do you feel about that? Are you pushing on the gas? Are you, that makes sense, awesome?
Yeah, but the numbers tell you the story. Like I said, pricing, you know, we could see a 3 or 4% appreciation, I believe, in the whole market. But if you look at those last comps, you're seeing they dropped a good bit, you're seeing inventory stack up. Then you know you take that extra 1% a month off your numbers. And if you get in and out in 6 months and you know where you're at and you know you take 6% off your numbers, you're safe. And if it goes up or it doesn't go down that much, you're covered. But those numbers will tell a lot of people not to buy it at the price they're trying to.
Right.
So we're seeing some of that happen, and we're not seeing a lot of people really look at why.
Yeah.
They just kind of go, oh, this number's good. Or so just a simple rule of thumb is take 5 or 6% off your numbers of ABR and really look at those last 1 or 2 months of sales if you can. Unless you're really value adding a property, you know, adding a floor, adding square footage, adding bedrooms and baths.
Right.
And that's a that really makes sense. Those value add properties are always great ones.
Right. So you talk about value add, not just renovating houses, but adding bedrooms, bathrooms, square footage. Is that what you're typically doing to your flips?
Yeah, I mean, if you can go from a two bedroom to a three bedroom, if you can add it from one bath to two baths, we know this has huge lifts on value, right?
But is that what you're intentionally always looking for, or
those numbers tend to work better.
Got it.
I always say when you're doing surgery on a house, right, there's uncertainty. That's where the bigger spreads are typically.
Got it.
I think we have something unique now in our market, the ADUs, right?
Right.
Well, what is an ADU for the
additional dwelling unit?
Right.
Little mom and mother-in-law suite in the back or something, right?
Right, because maybe they can monetize that.
Right.
So that's a huge issue for affordability. I think we really need to consider that as real estate professionals, as investors. And Jacksonville's pretty pro, they're saying, hey, we're pretty pro on that.
Right.
I mean, there's a Jack Sharia meetup group on this that you guys want to know more.
So it's funny, I was in Seattle, right, at an event. I was speaking at an event, and everybody, all they do out there is ADUs. That's the only thing you can do.
For affordability,
to still be able to flip houses. Hey, I have to buy a house. What's the ADU situation like? If you can't do an ADU, it's not a deal, right? And like here in Jacksonville, like, that's like new lingo. That's like new lingo.
Everything not in a CDD or HOA is impossible ADU in the city of Jacksonville,
correct,
right?
And so I feel like we don't really analyze deals of, let me add a mother-in-law suite. Let me build something on the side where people can monetize or rent it out to a family member or whatever.
How do we make everything a bedroom, bath split, right? There's all these maybe couple things, categories you might want to look at.
Right.
But one that kind of went the other way is like the Airbnb side, right? Like maybe a non-significant, non-vacation destination property isn't a great Airbnb.
Right.
You know, we saw maybe a saturation point on that.
Oh yeah. I was part of that.
Maybe.
So if we have any wholesalers listening or anybody or any realtors that are listening and they want to start pitching you deals, what are you looking for right now?
Yeah, I mean, you can, if you want to talk about the numbers, bring them to us. But in general, you know, I think there will be any investor you find will buy something 70% of ABR minus rehab. So I think that's a really good rule of thumb. Some might buy 75%, some might buy 80%. But if there's some value add or unique opportunities, bring them to us. Maybe we can make your numbers work if, right? The ABR might be higher than you think. So I think just having someone you can run things by that, you know, is an active buyer or has a network, that would be really good to do. I think the challenge we run into, and because you can relate, you know, if you made $30,000 or $50,000 on a wholesale, it's kind of hard to go to make $5,000 or $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we are, you know, the professionals are kind of rising up over the ones that are just trying it. And you also sometimes can bring someone who's going to do all the work, and then you can bring that back to that seller and have an adult conversation about, here's my numbers and why.
Right.
And we don't mind doing that with you. So we're totally fine with you guys getting paid as long as our numbers work.
Yeah.
So that'd be my great example of maybe uniqueness. Like, we're going to perform. We're going to buy every time after our inspection period, but we're gonna go run the numbers with our experts, and we'll even help give you the information so you can go back to the seller, because that's what's gonna happen, right? Wholesaler in today's market is gonna lock it up, and maybe you have to go back to the seller and make some adjustments. You need partners in that, you need to work together.
Agreed, you need ammunition, right?
So we're willing to do that, and we're doing enough flips to actually know the numbers, and we'll show why the numbers are where they're at by line breakdown.
That's huge, man. So I'm going to open it up to some Q&A, but before I do that, really quickly, how can people learn more about you, reach out to you, ask you questions, get connected?
Yeah, I mean, the internet, right? Like, I mean, you go
MySpace.
MySpace, Pinterest. No, none of those places. No,
TikTok.
I don't do any TikTok dances unless somebody catches me in a video. No, I mean, they can just go on Jay Parsity Beach or X Room Advisors. We have a team that answers the phone there. You're welcome to call anytime.
Expert Home Advisors.
Yep. Jay Parsity Beach. We're at 475 star reviews on Google. You guys can find us our Google line. Get some of our top agents if you have some questions. Our company line gets our staff. They'll get you on my calendar, or get you the right person to help you. That's the easiest way, I think. You guys can go to Instagram or Facebook. I don't post a lot, but if you want to, you know, send me a message, I try to communicate. I try to serve. I try to every day add value to people. Yeah. So I try to make 5 things of value a day. And, you know, if you're asking a question, I'll do my best to serve you.
That awesome, way. Man.
We're good on my calendar. If the team thinks we're going to be the right agent, if I can serve you guys. Yeah.
Perfect. So I want to go ahead and open it up now. If anybody has some Q&A, obviously you guys know Sean is the real deal, has been doing this for 20 years now, 20 plus years. And
it's like a lifetime.
And you've got other stats. I forget about other stats. What do you got there?
Well, so, you know, one of the things I always try to do is, you know, so those stats come out the 10th of the month, so they're already 40 days stale. So I kind of look every 15 days and pull my own stats. So first of all, if pendings were down 30% and 20%, they're down 7%. So the market's getting more demand. That's definitely something I'd like to see. Price changes, 1 out of 2 homes, 48% are reducing their price. Price change isn't usually going up. We know some of those people that do that. But in general, it goes down. So that means people are coming to market too high or for the condition. And now we're seeing some homes expire and withdraw, and that's up 39%. The current inventory, though, is going down. So once again, that's going to help us on the price lift, right? 1.9 months. But the median price point is down 5.8% in the whole market to 338. That's an important number, 338. Anytime you get homes underneath that, you're going to be better as an investor. You guys probably know that. If you're going to go above that, there might be more risk. And look at that subdivision and the zip codes. But the list median price is 318. That means people are coming to market lower right now. So that might drop. So we're going to watch that. We'll see how that could just be an irregularity of, you know, 2 weeks of data. So we're going to look at that and see if that's a trend. But pendings and contingents not being down much, less than closings, I mean, we'll see more closings in the following month.
Right.
So we'll see an increase in that. But I do look at things like, where else can people put their money? So when rates go up, you can put your money in some safer products and make 4 or 5%, right, guys and girls? So I think that's a factor for some people. So I think you need to think about that. If you can safely get people 8 or 10% returns, hard money, whatever your, you know, loan to value is, that's definitely an asset where a lot of people want to do that. But the stock market is very volatile. I think this is an important stat. You want to look at the Dow Jones indices, the sector. So just some things to consider. Energy's up, financials is up, real estate's slightly up, healthcare is up. Industries like technology, materials, and consumer staples are down. So I think there's some communication costs are up, 5G, 10G, whatever they're making up now. So I think it's some things to understand on the macro side. But if you look at this chart, it's like spaghetti, right?
Right.
So I think the stock market is very volatile, is what that tells us. Real estate is less volatile, but we do need to look at that, because if people feel very strong about the stock market, they'll probably put their money into that.
Right.
This tells us it's volatile, it's not a great place. Cryptocurrency is another example of like more like betting on like playing blackjack than it is like, right? So I think that bodes well for real estate, but it tells us kind of what's happening here as far as the economy goes. So I think volatility will be something we continue to see.
Yeah.
That's what that tells me.
Nice. So more people should put their money into real estate.
Real estate's been a great, stable investment. You get a depreciation on it. You can cash flow it. You can also invest your money where you get a guaranteed rate of return. I think we all know people, including ourselves, that would be happy to help people with that.
That's true.
And I think you can still do really well on the long term of real estate. Right. But obviously, you know, getting your money back out and burning it is more of a cash flow issue. I think we've seen that in a while.
Nice. So I want to go ahead and open it up. Anybody have any questions for Sean?
Good evening. My name is Naveen Modali. I've been in Jacksonville for 14 years, a wannabe real estate investor, kind of scaling up. I do have a basic portfolio. A question for you is, there is a significant amount of development happening within the city of Jacksonville limits, and some of the neighborhoods that adjoin those, like Mixon Town or Newtown or the East Side. What are you seeing there from an investor point of view? Based on what I have listened and what I've seen, many of the developments that are happening within the city are kind of builder-owned. They're not really given out for the outside investors. So as an investor trying to catch up on the wave, what are you seeing in the market nowadays?
I mean, I think that's a good question. I think when you see a lot of development happening, especially something that's going to increase the livability, restaurants, parks, amenities, you want to invest near that. You're going to catch the wave, right? The rising tide. I think that's the simplest way you can look at it. There's a lot of big bets happening with other people's money. You know, if you're in proximity, you know, that's a good thing. Hopefully that answers that question a little bit.
Do you have any data around those areas that suggest that?
Well, yeah, so the rules of Zillow wrote a book, and they kind of went through all these things. One of the things they disproved, that buying an REO was a good investment versus buying something moving ready, and they actually did the numbers on that. But they also called one thing called the Starbucks effect, about buying something near a Starbucks. So that's kind of the principle. I'll give you an example right now that we see in the numbers with the game. That Southside Bartram area, well, Durbin Park Pavilion, even though it's like Walmarts and Dollar Trees and whatever, the reality is everything tells you like those investments are better. So there's a great example of just like, even though it's a Dollar Tree and a Walmart and a gate and a Wawa, which seems to be how we develop in Jacksonville. But despite that, there are some mom and pop restaurants and things popping in those areas.
The Wawa effect, not the Starbucks effect. The Wawa effect.
So yeah, I think anytime you see a lot of investment, you know, commercial money tends to be a little bit smarter and longer position. But when you stop seeing the cranes move, you want to think about that as well. That's definitely something we did see before. But I think Jacksonville's really blessed. We definitely see a lot of this development happening, and that's rising the whole area. You know, affordability is important, but a mix of some local things as well. Downtown's a great example of, you know, younger people want to live there. Families want to live around that stuff, so that's really important. And yeah, as an investor, if you can invest near it, it's usually you're going to catch that rise.
Got it. My second question is, given the current situation in the market, especially with the interest rates, normally the creative financing options are typically not open for investors who are actually dealing with properties which are on the market through the MLS. Like Carlos or someone else might have a direct contact with the seller and they can ask for this creative financing. But given the current situation, are you having any positive vibes if I, as an investor, and someone from you as an agent, hey, would your seller consider seller financing based on what's happening? The majority I'm seeing is they're giving a pushback. The agent is not even considering talking to a buyer, even putting that offer to the seller. Are you even open for a seller financing kind of a deal? But not every seller is open for seller financing, but how do we bridge the gap, especially the agents not knowing some of the ins and outs of these creative financing?
It's a great question also. I mean, real estate agents are terrible sometimes, right, as an investor to work with. I mean, I can tell you that for sure. Why is that? I think they, you know, want to act like it's their family and they're serving them by helping get a traditional sale at the highest price. But honestly, for a lot of people I recently talked to, if they have predictable cash flow coming in, they might consider it. Unfortunately, days on market has to usually go up for them to consider that. I would also tell you, you know, listen, whether someone hires a VA or get text messages, or my agents do, we're inundated, just like offers for car warranties or healthcare. So we're kind of jaded as well. So if you establish some relationships with agents, it's helpful. And consider just an LOI. Like, would your person consider? And start establishing relationships with agents as you with more listings. I think you'd find unlocking a dozen agents that are open to that, you get listings all the time, you might find an opportunity to kind of get some properties before they go on the market. And now when you see days of market going up, I think people are more open to that. That's helpful. And then we love them, because a lot of these people lock in at low interest rates and they're happy with the cash flow. I mean, I'm talking to people more and more that are interested more in, why sell this? I'm concerned about having $100,000. I'd rather have some cash flow, and I don't plan to buy it again. These are all things that a good agent can help you unlock, but it just starts with maybe establishing some rapport and not, you know, like I said, I get spammed a lot, and that's challenging. I think a lot of agents are, unfortunately, have their guard up a little bit on that.
Thank you.
I would love just more insight on where's the cost benefit threshold in your mind on an ADU, and then, you know, how do you address the idea of the septic tank issue with that?
Cool. Also a great question.
Yeah. These are great questions.
Mike knows something.
I mean, I would say the first thing we need to consider is, like, we just had a flip that we did that, you know, could be an ADU. We just rehabbed the outside unit the best we could, updated the electric, did not connect it to the septic. We put a new septic in. So I think that's definitely a consideration. I think affordability is the way we need to look at it. So if this was like a $350,000 all-in 3-2 pool home, like a fully remodeled pool home, which, by the way, which was $300 when we did the numbers just 6 months ago. So that was great. But the ADU thing is going to help with affordability. Or what's their vision of it? Do they want to, you know, do they have a boomeranging child, or they have an aging parent? But connecting to a septic system, you know, I think, unfortunately, the health department, the county, they're saying, hey, we're okay with ADUs, but they're not answering these questions,
right?
Correct? So I think as a homeowner, you need to understand that, or an investor, I'm inheriting, you know, I own a property, these are my problems. So then you gotta start addressing those, and maybe just a septic system that's large enough to accommodate that.
Yeah. I've got an add-on just on the ADU. I guess I'd need the mic.
There's a lot of opportunity to use. I really think from affordability, from values going up, from creating modernization as an investor, I think there's a lot of opportunity there, because Jacksonville is like kind of saying, yeah, we get it. This is okay. But there's not a lot of rules around what's okay.
Right. Well, and same for lenders too, right? On the land, right? And a lot of lenders are
appraisers. They're acting like it doesn't exist.
Yeah, appraisers. I mean, lenders actually recognize ADU, but appraisers, it's difficult to figure out if you don't have comps with ADUs.
Yeah, you need like three comps in six months of ADUs to make it
right.
Work.
Yeah, that's so that was.
We're not there. We're not there.
I was just going to ask you. So, from a standpoint of, if you're representing somebody who's going to buy or list one of those, how do you help them bridge that appraisal gap? I mean, is it, you know, what can you do from that standpoint in terms of educating the appraiser?
I think it's your opportunity to acquire something. And then, you know, once you bat up a year of proven, you know, most lenders are like, if you can show there's rent history, then all of a sudden you don't have an issue.
Right.
So I think you gotta take that risk on as an investor, as a homeowner, either to lower your kind of fixed costs. I mean, original house hack, they call it house hacking now, but when I bought a property, I rented to my buddies so I didn't have to pay a mortgage, right? Like, I didn't call it house hacking. I just said, wow, $600 a month is a lot of money. I like to go out to bars and I want to buy a new car. Like, how do I do that? I have these bedrooms to rent out. So I think if everyone just thinks of what's best for them, they'll come to the conclusion that makes sense. But they have to probably know for the next first 6 months to maybe probably a year, they're going to prove it works. And if they have a good documented history, I think a lot of lenders will work with them. But it's a great opportunity in Jacksonville, for sure.
I can ask a million more questions.
And it solves the affordability issue I think we're truly dealing with. Because obviously, we're the only people between investors and real estate professionals that actually are trying to solve affordability. And it's clearly not tiny homes. I mean, there's not zoning to go build tiny home villages everywhere. And I think people who live in tiny homes or RVs get out of them pretty quickly. So I think we need to think about that.
Interesting on Jack's news yesterday. I don't watch the news that often, but it was on while we were making dinner, and the guy was interviewing a lady in Atlanta who was living in her ADU and renting out her house, and she said, "I'm living for free."
Yeah.
So there's
your there's going to be some great opportunity for that. Yeah.
Thank you for the gold nugget of ADU. I have a property on a contract that the previous owner deturned the carport to an ADU. And I have it on the contract, and I'm planning to do that. I'm planning to either have a house hack, rent the ADU to someone, and maybe have the house for rent, or maybe even turn it to Airbnb somewhat. My question to you was, how do you find your flips? How do you market? How do you get those deals? I see properties all the time from wholesalers and agents, but I'm just trying to go straight to the owners, of course, driving for dollars and knocking some doors. But do you have any other golden nuggets that you can show?
Yeah, I think the challenge is everything works over time. The question is, you know, find someone that's doing it and model what they're doing. Like, we were just talking about the mastermind that you're a part of. You learn from other people's experiments. But yes, the bottom line is, if you can go directly to the homeowner and create a win, that's your best way to get a deal. When you start having it on the MLS or real estate agents involved or a wholesaler, unless you've proven to do business with them, it's harder to make that work. And I think we're all coming up with those challenges. I've had to look at a lot more deals to make the numbers work. But mail outs work, billboards work, radio ads work, internet, pay-per-click works. It all works. It's just, what's the budget? How long is it going to take? And who am I modeling that's already doing it that I actually can collapse time by learning? Because, okay, I didn't know I had to spend $20,000 for the next year until I would get an ROI on it. And I think people quit too soon, or they pick the wrong company, or they, find someone who's doing it and model what they're doing. I think, and what's great about these rooms is there's lots of people doing things that work. Right. But the network part really does help, because if you are a cash buyer and deals fall through and you can step in, I think, the networking is where all the deals happen. All the REI group, meetup groups, I feel like there's been deals that have happened from that for everybody.
Yeah.
That's the best part.
I have a question, but I was going to beforehand mention one thing. We actually live in a house that has an ADU. We built it like 20 years ago. So throughout the years, whenever we refinance, the appraisers, when they look at the ADU, the mud law suite, they actually reduce the dollar per square foot. So if our main house, they put it like $150 per square foot, the ADU portion, they'll put it $50 a square foot for that. So it actually reduces
the overall
price, because
banks are always trying to protect themselves, right?
Right, and it's always been like that, even though we've been always arguing that the ADU is actually should be more money per square foot, because it gives you more flexibility and everything, and actually costs more to build. But they've always been like that, and to your point, when you're saying it's hard to find comps, we've always been negotiating / arguing with the appraisers throughout the years. So that's probably going to be an issue still until there's more ADUs on the market for the comps. So for that. But for my main question, a year ago, everyone's moving down from New York, all the different places.
You're always leaving New York.
That's I know. So for there. And are you tracking at all the number of people that are coming into Jacksonville? Like a year ago, there was a ton. Might be slowing down now, I'm not sure. But, and is there any correlation between the number of people moving into Jacksonville and the prices declining at all, because supply and demand kind of issue?
Another great question. Great question. One of the things that we get an opportunity to really know is real-time data on, we put a lot of money out on sites like Google, right? Pay-per-click, people searching for homes. And we target zip codes within the state, in the area, and then out of the area. And we actually track that every single month. We spend about $10,000. So pretty good test of what's happening. The pay-per-click world's kind of operated the same, meaning like if you try to put a lot of dollars worth of pay-per-click in November, December, less people are searching for homes. Mm-hmm. And then a lot more people start searching in January. And then it kind of goes through kind of the spring seasonality, and almost follows the sales cycle, almost exactly. But out of area, there are more people we see moving from the Northeast and the West Coast to our area. And less, it's interesting, because at one point it was like almost all West Coast of New York. But now we're seeing a lot of Midwest, like Chicago is a great example of an area. So we get a lot of data on that. But then you want to track, well, then who becomes a transaction, right? And we are finding people are going online about a year before they pull the trigger. So it's hard to draw exact correlation to your question, but Northeast Florida keeps showing up on a lot of lists, right? Top place for this, or best place to live, or
it was just saw an article, it was like one of the best places to retire.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the media loves to say things. When it's in our favor, we share it. When it's not, we ignore it.
Yes.
We keep getting shared, right? As one of the places to go to. That clicks follow that very quickly. And then people, in a lot of these higher tax areas or areas with higher costs or less stability, we know they're leaving those areas. And Jacksonville, Northeast Florida, is one of those places more people come to than are leaving. And we are, I was saying this earlier before this actually started. When I was at that publicly traded company, we had 26 West Coast, like California, Arizona-based offices, Denver-based offices. And they were just going through this thing. No matter what's happening in the market, they always did a little bit better. It's still went up and down. I feel like Northeast Florida is in year three of that 10-year journey. So I do think we are going to be, and you can ask experts and other people, there's a consensus on that, being that we're going to outperform the national story. I don't think it's all Dollar Trees and Walmart, so I hope it's a, you know, and then the, you know, the cheapest thing you can put up. So we'll see what that looks like, because I think there's a lack of master planning, but we also have more geographic area than any other city. So we'll have more of that sprawl. We don't have a lot of public transportation, right? So, but we do have all this river and ocean front and water and lifestyle-based stuff, and it seems like we're ahead of the traffic curve compared to a lot of major cities. So I'm very optimistic the next 10 years here. So I still feel like, just like the last 10 or 14 years, don't you wish you bought everything? So I think we'll look, if you're thinking long-term and you're thinking about, you know, we have to make better cash flow decisions because our money gets tied up now in assets. That's what banks are doing to protect themselves. That's what interest rates do to us, so you can buy less. So there's a natural kind of benefit to the slowdown that does happen for us for long-term. It's a little painful as it's happening for all of us because, you know, our bills are still due first of the month. We don't think in 10-month cycles and 3-year cycles, but I do think, we'll all be pretty happy with anything we acquire in 3 or 4 years from now.
And then one other follow-up for investors.
Cash flow, right?
Right, exactly. I mean, issue. I'm renting properties.
Yeah, all of us. And the banks want X amount of dollars in interest. I can't rent that out for gain. And sellers want more money than they can buy for. That's really happening.
Yeah.
Are you still seeing like a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you know, people from California, investors coming in and just buying sight unseen? Is the demand still, it's probably not as high, but are you still seeing it where you're still coming in just buying without looking, or
that market's just
tapering down?
I mean, I would truly say that bridle of optimism maybe we saw last spring, which is not normal. There was a lot of regretful buyers in the last 6 or 10 months. That's a lot of these homes that we are seeing for less investments. You know, it depends, right? If they took their retirement assets that were losing money in the stock market, and they're happy getting a positive rent check, those people are happy. Unfortunately, I think we had more speculative investors quite often. Or, you know, I think, you know, trying to buy homes remotely and not being local, you still need a local professional team. And a lot of people cut those corners. I think that's what creates the opportunity as well. But no, there's the real estate category is not unbridled optimism. It is cautious. And I think it starts with, the smart money or Wall Street money, depending on what you want to call that. And they are kind of, you know, we buy this week. No, our criteria changes next week. And like that is happening on like a bipolar level, right? Would you agree?
Yes.
And there are pockets, this information is subjective, right? We're looking at it and like, wow, it's, I just wonder the best zip code, Sean. It's like, well, it depends, right? So, that uncertainty creates opportunity, right, in pockets, and there's pockets that are going up a lot and going down. Great example, some people say, don't invest in this zip code. It's like, throw the zip code out there. 3209?
Yeah. 08.
Terrible zip code, 08. Well, if you 2 years ago bought it, you're up 100% plus. Yeah. So they were wrong, right? Even though the consensus is, don't buy there. So you can make money in any zip code. Now, when things go up really fast, when things go the wrong way, they kind of go down, right? Create some more opportunity there. But if you bought right, you're fine. So I think that, and if you bought in St. John's County, you're not going up. You know, you had a lot more money tied up. Maybe you had higher taxes, CDD, HOA fees. Learned some things like, oh, I can't do that in this HOA, right? All these things that people learn. And your carrying costs are higher, even though it went up. You know, it's not a great investment for that reason. So I think we just have this unique market that there's a lot of pockets of opportunity, and we keep showing up on lists, so people are going to log in online and look at our homes. And we also have people who dream of retiring or living in Florida. That's the New York story. And but the thing where we were a deal when you looked, I kind of judge my family from Philadelphia, and they kind of say, hey, I'm looking at some of your homes now, like they're not deals anymore. So we are now in that category where we're not just like, everything's a good deal, we need to buy it. Now it's like, yeah, look and consider it. Or I like the look of this house, or it has a pool or whatever. Mm-hmm. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, Sean, G, I just want to thank you guys for this today. It's been very helpful and informative. Some of the stats you've been sharing, quite staggering, you know, and it's just very helpful. So thank you for that. My name is Emmanuel Pramonte. I'm with PadSplit. So we're the nation's leading co-living marketplace for workforce housing. And kind of going back to your topic and your point about affordability and really focusing in on cash flow, last month there we had alternative investments here, alternative rentals at Jack Soria. What are ways that PadSplit and other organizations can help educate realtors and on these alternative rentals, just to show them the value and how we can bring greater cash flow and make maybe what's not a deal a deal?
I mean, PadSplit's a great opportunity, great example where I think, it's kind of like, hey, this one market, like Atlanta, has done a lot of this, and we don't have a lot in Jacksonville. There's a first mover opportunity. I think we're seeing that happen. I mean, how many properties would you say are kind of in the, I mean, imagine you've got a pretty good mix of properties in PadSplit's looking at, right? Are people looking to bring to PadSplit?
Yeah, so we got 500 doors about approximately here in Jacksonville, but growing.
Yeah, so we know there's at least an opportunity to have 1,500 to 2,000 doors.
Right, somewhere saturation.
Right, yeah. Until that point. So there's an opportunity right there. And, I'm guessing we're seeing really good ROIs when you're kind of doing those numbers, because you guys manage it, acquire, do all the background.
Yeah, so it is both supply and demand, where investors are providing supply and demands coming from the members that we vet through the income verification, through the background checks, eviction reports, and all that. But I guess it's more so just kind of how do we show the value? How do we get it out there to realtors to educate them on it? What are some recommendations? What are things that we can do as an organization to just grow awareness?
I can think of two things you can do that would be pretty easy that probably would collapse time. I would do a case study with a couple examples of investors that won, and I would show people, because you're at the end of the day, we're trying to find product homes that homeowners might have and investors that see the opportunity. So I think you're doing a great job with the investor community, but I'd also think the opportunity to just kind of show that opportunity to do it. Okay. Just like Curbio has been doing with, the rehab side of it, even though it's costly. In your example, there would be a lot of people that would benefit. And there's affordability thing that is matching in the market, where now people can get into a room for an affordable rate at a short-term level.
Right.
So that's really helping our market. I know we struggle with finding people places they can live safely. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the case study side of it. Maybe in a video, kind of telling the story a little bit, a little longer, where people can watch that. I don't know how many of those you guys have done, but I haven't seen any. Specifically,
okay.
I would say that's
so really marketing, getting out there.
People don't know, it's jargon. People don't know what PadSplit means.
Yeah.
Investors are starting to become aware of it, but investors are still like, did you do it? How's it working? Yeah. So showcase those stories where people are doing it and it's working. I think now you see that happening, and then obviously connecting to homes that could work. I think the homeowners might not know that's an opportunity.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you so much for tuning in for another segment of the Cash Geeks Network. Make sure you rewatch this on our YouTube channel, on Facebook, go to iTunes. You're not going to want to miss all the stats that we talked about. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you, Sean, for doing this. Guys, I'm out.